Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast. My name's Shane, and we've got a guest of another fellow YouTuber by the name of Will from Will's Easy Guitars. So it's an absolute pleasure to have you on, mate. I appreciate your time. So,
well, thanks for having me. You know,
no worries at all. Now let's just take a quick look at some of the, or let's have a talk about some of the guitars that you make currently. Like I said just before we started the podcast, I've just jumped on your website and you've got some beautiful guitars. There's one that I saw that was very steampunk in design, and I'm a huge steampunk fan.
Oh yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your designs.
Okay. Well, basically, I end up building almost anything that somebody wants, and a lot of the guitars that I built, and generally you're going to see that this is more for people that are actually outperforming or they're established like guitarists. They want something that is very custom, that is either for a very specific show or a tour that has a certain theme, or they want something that matches their personality. And the steampunk guitar, there's a Japanese singer guitarist who contacted me, and she says, you know, I want a steampunk guitar. And I said, okay, that's not going to be a problem. And then after I talked to her, I got off and I'm talking to her. Then I ended up having to look up what steampunk was, because I had no idea what the hell that was.
Yeah.
And after I looked at it, and I'm like, oh, it's kind of like the Wild Wild West a little bit, like the movie, you know?
Yeah, it's sort of like a mix between mechanical and it's sort of like, I guess, the inside of a clock mixed with... I don't know what else. The old school stuff.
Yeah, so I was sitting there and I started thinking about it, and I'm like, so how would a steampunk guitar look? And so I drew out a sketch and I said, this should work. I started building it, and during the time that I'm building it, I'm like, you know, this is when I'm starting to come up with more ideas. Kind of like when, I suppose, like when an artist is, you know, hammering out a marble statue of something. They're sitting there, and at first they say, this is what I envision, but as they're doing it, like, oh, you know, it'd be really cool if you did this.
Yeah.
So a lot of these guitars, actually, after I come up with a initial game plan, they start building themselves.
Yep.
And I know it's done when the guitar tells me it's done. And that one, yeah, when I built that for her and I gave it to her, she was just floored with it.
Yeah,
it's and it's interesting. There's no other guitar out there like it, you know?
Yeah, I've seen some effects pedals that have the steampunk sort of vibe, but not many guitars. What sort of time and effort goes into something like that? Like, how many hours would you say? Is that like a 50 or 100 hour job or more or less?
I never really think about the hours. I prefer actually doing guitars that I'm having to carve or I'm having to be creative with, because I get lost in it.
Yeah.
And I have like an art background. So it's like if I'm in front of a canvas, I can actually lose 6 or 7 hours out of my day and not even realize
it. Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Right? You forget to eat. You know, you're just stuck in that mode. And on that one, I couldn't even tell you how long it took me. I don't even remember.
Yeah, wow. I noticed some of your other guitars have, well, I don't know if this isn't a derogatory comment, but there's one that definitely has an 80s vibe to it, like a yellow, it's got the handle and the, is that influenced? Was that a custom build as well, though, or are they all custom builds, or do you just, are there any sort of base models?
I do custom builds a lot, but I have base models as well.
Cool.
That the fluorescent yellow one that you're talking about with the like the pistol grip type thing, or whatever you call it, the monkey grip.
Yeah.
I built that for Dale Bozzio, the singer of Missing Persons.
Okay, cool.
And so Missing Persons, you know, we have this early 80s new wave type sound and stuff. And so the fluorescent yellow, I mean, neon was huge in the 80s, and she used to paint her hair all different colors and everything. And the blue stripe is off their first album, which was a Spring Session M. The pick guard is actually a mirror and stuff. And I had to build in effects into that guitar for her, but she's very small. A lot of people don't know that Dale Bozzio is very small. She's only maybe 4'10" or something like that. She's very little. So when I built the guitar, I had to even change the scale. Everything about it was to fit her. And so if you look at it and think, oh, well, that would fit me, it would be like picking up almost a child's guitar.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Like a mini acoustic guitar.
For her, yeah, yeah, but for her, it was perfect. Yeah. And we were actually working back and forth together. We were going to come out with that model and start selling it. We were talking to Guitar World to see if they would be interested in kind of doing a thing on that. And then I ended up losing touch with her. It's a long story. It's nothing. It's not like we had a bad relationship or anything, but Dale is, you know, yeah, you're in touch with her one day and then you don't know what happened to her. And then 6 months later, you find out she's somewhere else. And
yeah, yeah, yeah. Nice.
Drama.
Yeah. Well, speaking of drama, your YouTube channel has been my guilty pleasure over the last couple of months. You know what? I love your content, and I can tell you're an intelligent guy. I don't know what your background is exactly, but you seem to understand physics. I noticed a couple of other videos that were completely like off topic recently that were really showcased your intellect. And what's your background in terms of what did you do before guitars, man? Because you're I'm not saying guitars don't require brain power, but you've obviously got a little more intelligence than the average YouTuber.
No, before I started building guitars, I was in the Army. And then, but before the Army, I was an auto mechanic, and I loved mechanics. Ever since I was a kid, I was fixing things and figuring out how things worked and and whatnot, trying to invent stuff. And I went in the Army, and then I did well in the Army until I hurt my back, and then I got out. And then I was trying to find a career that would suit basically my art and my creativeness and everything, yeah, cool, but something that paid the bills.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I ended up getting into construction. And during the time that I was in construction and stuff, I was also finishing up my schooling. So I ended up getting my bachelor's in bioinformatics. And and people always go, what the hell is that?
Yeah, okay, that's my next question.
Yeah, bioinformatics is ultimately microbiology with computer programming. And there's a lot of stuff involved in the bioinformatics field that you're doing gene research.
Yeah, wow.
You're doing research for drug companies, mm-hmm, looking at certain proteins, seeing what the active sites are and stuff. And then you're taking the stuff from here and then trying to create a computer model of these proteins and trying to manipulate them and seeing how they interact with different chemicals and molecules and stuff. And you end up getting new drugs from it. You know, you end up finding certain genes within a certain strand of DNA or whatever. And you say, this is what's responsible for making the person fat. This is what's responsible for making the person, you know, get cancer. And then you figure out ways to splice that out and change it up. So there's a lot of stuff involved in that. But from construction and everything, I never even worked in that field, by the way. After I got my bachelor's in that, I never worked in the field.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
They all want master's degrees or PhDs, right? And bachelor's just wasn't going to work. But with the construction thing, it just started turning into some people would, you know, they'd be asking for things like, can you build an entertainment center or something? And it started turning, can you build a bed? Can you build this? And so my woodworking that, you know, from building homes and all this other stuff, all of a sudden turned into furniture and whatnot. And I had been playing the guitar since high school. And then one day I said, you know, why in the hell don't I build my own guitar? You know, and I was afraid that there was something secret and special about the neck and the frets. And if you don't do it just right, you're going to screw it up and the thing's going to warp. And I built a guitar and I was like, that was a lot easier than I thought.
Yeah, wow.
And from there is when I started building more and more guitars. Some friends of mine that are so much better at playing than I am, you know, I asked them, I said, hey, tell me your ideal guitar because I'm going to build it.
Yeah.
And so he's like, well, I need this, this, and this. And this is where Tonewood started with me, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he says it has to be ebony. It has to be Carina. The body has to be Carina. It has to be like this. And he's going through. And in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, well, he knows what he's talking about. He's so much of a better guitarist, and he's been playing so much longer. And acoustically, when I pick up an electric, I could hear a difference. And so it seemed counterintuitive for me to think anything other than that. and then as time went by, I got better and better at it. And I started thinking I can improve upon these designs.
Yeah.
And so I started doing experiments with body shapes and stuff like that. And I started taking what I knew about physics and other aspects of mechanics and started putting that into the guitar thing. But I still believed in tone wood. Okay.
Yeah.
And then just one day I was sitting there, and this is when I started getting more and more business, and I started kind of getting a little bit known, not so much in the general public, but among people in the industry. They know who I am, and not all of them. I mean, that'd be arrogant, you know. But I started seeing people talk about tone wood being bullshit and it's not real, and it was pissing me off. And I said, you know something, I'm going to prove that wood makes a difference. So I ended up making all these different guitars, and I swapped out the pickups and all this other stuff, and I'm playing them through clean, and I'm like, I don't really hear that big of a difference or any difference at all. And yeah. And I thought, something's got to be wrong.
Yeah, and
it was what was wrong is that on a solid body electric guitar, it really doesn't make that big of a difference. And, you know, I went through all the physics over it and everything, trying to figure out why it did what it did. And as soon as I went public with that, good Lord, I've been catching shit ever since.
Yeah, it's like you've exposed something that I guess that a lot of people have just had drilled into them for a long, long time. That, you know, like on my last podcast, freaking Prawn mentioned that you can really hear that mahogany sound, you know, over the swamp ash or whatever. And I think you're right. In terms of electric guitars, I got two that are basically identical to each other. Just the woods are different on the body. They sound exactly the same. Same pickups, same setup. But I think, you know, the sustain thing that people talk about, it comes down to probably, well, my impression of it, and I'm not a guitar builder, would it be more the hardware that's on the guitar that would give you more sustain over the actual wood itself?
You kind of really do have to look at the total picture of it.
Yep.
And usually, unless there's something really bonkers about the way that the guitar is built, usually it's going to be things like your pickups and your bridge. Those are your two main things.
Yep.
Then from there, the next would probably be like your frets.
So I guess if you can, just explain some of the tests you did. I've seen some of your YouTube videos, and I'll post links also to those. But just give everyone a quick rundown of some of the tests you did to explain
the very first test that I did is I just took blocks of wood of different species, and there was no neck or anything like that, and it was just basically a pickup, a bridge, and the tuners. And I figured if species makes a difference, I should be able to hear a difference between each one of these species. And I took a number of species, and I played each one of them, and they all sounded the same. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter what species it was. And I was just sitting there, and I'm thinking, okay, well, then it must be the neck. It must be the neck species then. And then so what I ended up doing is I took bodies, and I changed out the necks, and no, not really. And I only started noticing a difference when you start dealing with bridges that don't have a lot of mass, and when you start dealing with very thin necks or necks that are poorly connected to the body. If you get a pickup that has a metal cover on it and it hasn't been wax potted, sometimes you can get a little bit of some funny stuff happening there.
Okay.
But ultimately, all the tests that I did, I just kept coming back to the same thing, that the species does not matter. What matters is how you build the guitar and how it's constructed. That's what matters. And, you know, when you tell that to some people, good Lord, they get so angry. And I mean, like when I first had to accept that this whole tone wood on solid body electric guitars was basically bullshit, to me, it was almost as hard as, you know, becoming an atheist from being a Christian.
Yeah.
And it was really hard for me. I was in denial for a good week or so. And then finally, I just accepted it. I said, well, this is what all the evidence points to. And if anybody can prove to me otherwise, then I'll be more than willing to change my mind. And there's been a few people on YouTube that have done videos that says, this proves Tonewood. But every single one of their tests, I can see where it's flawed because mm-hmm. they didn't take in a certain factor that can dramatically change the way that a guitar sounds. Like you might, this is off of Tonewood. This is off of Tonewood, but you'll see people do this type of shit all the time on YouTube. Guitarists, I mean, I hate saying it because they're my bread and butter. They're generally not that bright. Okay. And when they decide to do a test or an experiment, they're not thinking about any of the other factors. They're only thinking about this one factor. And so you'll see somebody say, you know, this particular pickup or this particular guitar, what sounds better? And so what they'll do is they'll take like a pickup and then they'll put this pickup in a Strat and they'll play it. And they take it out and then they put it in a Les Paul and they play it. And then they sit there and they'll say, oh, well, this doesn't sound good. And it's like, well, wait a minute. You can't do that because you're dealing with two different scale lengths. You're dealing with different bridges. You're dealing with all these different things, all these different factors. And, you know, one pickup does not fit all. That's another mistake that a lot of guitarists make. They go on the Seymour Duncan website or something and they go, I need to have a rock, like a real heavy, you know, thing. And they'll say, that one is made for that. But they're not thinking about their guitar and is it going to work with that particular guitar? Because depending on how your guitar is, its scale length, the type of bridge that you're using and everything like that, it might not perform the way that you think it's going to perform. Because it really is a totality of the guitar.
So if you had two identical, say, like with that new cardboard Strat that's come out, and I won't hound you about that because I know you've got plenty of emails about it. But my theory was, like, I had a Squire and I also had a Fender Strat. So if I took the pickguard out of one, put it in the other, you know, tone-wise, it basically sounds like the pickups. So, yeah, that was even a simple home test, which doesn't take into account all the factors, of course, by changing the hardware. I think that cardboard Strat might be a pretty good example of how, you know, something that's not even made of wood still sounds exactly like a Strat. And my guess would be if we took that all that hardware out of that guitar, put it in a wood guitar and you did a blindfold test, what's your opinion? Would there be any difference in the tone?
There would be a little bit more sustain. And I imagine that, well, see, this is the thing. That cardboard guitar was impregnated with resin. And it, you know, because the cardboard by itself, there's no way it could hold the hardware with the amount of tension that is on those strings.
Yep.
And one of the reasons why I haven't even brought up that guitar or saying that this is the end of the Tonewood debate, because it really isn't. Okay. When I see that guitar, what I see is just, paper, basically, it does come from a tree, right? Cardboard does come from a tree.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the question is if you ended up having that guitar and you put it right and you switched the hardware with a Strat that was made of alder, would the alder one sound brighter than the cardboard? And so this is where the debate, it doesn't end. It creates new things. Because now there's tone cardboard. Now we have tone cardboard.
Yeah, and then there'll be a relict tone cardboard at one point as well, which costs you an extra grand.
Exactly. And then if you have somebody sign it, then it costs you an extra $1,200.
It's pretty funny that the guys in the custom shop mentioned that, hey, you know, hey, it just sounds like a Strat. You know, that's pretty funny, I thought.
Of course it's going to sound like a Strat. It's using Strat hardware and Strat electronics. Of course it's going to sound like a Strat. I mean, same scale length. But the Tonewood debate has really always been about does this species somehow end up making your tone warmer or brighter, right? I mean, a Les Paul is still going to sound like a Les Paul no matter what you make it out of. And, you know, a Strat's going to sound like a Strat. It's just, can you shape your tone using just, you know, different types of wood?
Yeah.
That's really what it's all about. And I think that, the realization is, the species, unless you go on an extreme, isn't going to make a difference. Unless you go on an extreme, but if you end up, how you build a guitar though, can make a difference, not really in the tone, but it'll change the dynamics of it. So it'll have more sustain. The attack will be different. Like there's going to be certain nuances you're going to pick up that you're not going to pick up on this other guitar the way that's built. I mean, we've all picked up Strat copies or something, and it's like the notes are all dead. It's just like it sounds like shit.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. It's got a maple neck. It's got an alder body. It, according to the Tonewood guys, it should sound this way. And it's there's something else going on.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
other factors.
Okay. So hardware would obviously play a big, you can obviously hear the difference between a Telecaster bridge pickup and a Strat bridge pickup based on mm-hmm. what I would assume, the way that it's mounted into the bridge as opposed to just being mounted mm-hmm. onto the pickguard. So you're saying that two identical bodies with the same wood but different hardware obviously going to sound completely different to each other. And that might be maybe more of the tone difference than anything than the actual wood themselves.
That
made sense. Sorry.
There's one thing you brought up, the Telecaster bridge, and there's one thing about the Telecaster that is different than Strats and Ibanez and all this other stuff is their bridge and their pickup is mounted onto the bridge, mm-hmm. and that bridge is within the magnetic field of that pickup. And the way that it's mounted, it's not really super tight, and it does give a little bit of room for vibration. So it's kind of the exception to the rule that when you're dealing with a Telecaster, you might actually be getting a little bit of that wood sound coming through on a Telecaster, depending, of course. That's not always the case, but it's the exception to the rule because of the way that the pickup is mounted to the bridge. And a lot, I know some of the people that are watching this are already cursing my name, but one of the things that people always mess up on is they think that pickups are microphones, mm-hmm. and they are not microphones, and they are not microphonic. And when they say, "Oh no, I can talk," and it's like the strings are moving when you're talking, or I can take the strings off, and if I hit the guitar, I can hear the noise. And it's like, yeah, but there's springs underneath the trim. Or there's always something there that's vibrating, that's metal within the magnetic field is going to do that.
Yeah.
And it's not a true microphone. And what's happening in the body is not really going to be coming through on that. But when you end up having the Telecaster bridge and the way that the pickup is setting in there, it's acting like a very thick diaphragm. And depending on what type of tension springs that you have on that pickup, if they're really loose or if they're really tight, can also change the way it's going to end up sounding on a Telecaster. So, it's one of these things where it's complex, but at the same time, I don't think people should look into it as much as they are looking into it. Focus on your pickups, focus on your tone knob and your amp settings.
Yep. And one more thing too, the playing, which should always be ahead of,
Oh, absolutely.
Trolling
absolutely.
And arguing about, Tonewoods and other people's opinions and experience, I guess, as well.
Well, yeah. I think you do a lot of reviews on pedals and stuff, there's one trap that I fell into, and I think every guitarist has fallen into. And that is, you want to sound like this, you have to have that gear.
Yeah. Yep.
And so you go out and you spend a fortune and you're like, I'm getting closer. I'm getting closer. And you never reach it. And then one day, after years and years of having a bunch of buyer's remorse, you end up realizing it's here.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's here. And because I was trying to get Eddie Van Halen's tone for years, and I bought all of his amps, I bought all of his guitars, I bought all of his pedals, mm-hmm. I read all the magazines trying to do the Variac, I did all that shit, and yeah. I always sounded like me.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I did the same thing when in the early days of my playing. I was really influenced by Clapton's sort of 90s blues, not his Cream stuff so much, but I went out, got the 335, got it. Well, I couldn't afford the amp that he was playing, obviously, but I found out it was just, you're never going to be able to get that. And not only, sometimes CDs or live DVDs aren't always the best reference for tone as well, because a lot of that stuff's produced and a lot of people don't realize that the sound that might be on stage might not be what you're getting on the DVD a lot of the time as well. So mm-hmm. for me, I guess the only way you're going to sound similar to someone is if you really spend like a lifetime trying to replicate or emulate that sort of sound. But on the most part, people will still sound like themselves. I think, you know, a great example is Eric Clapton, you know, ripped off all the Freddie King licks under the sun and sounds complete. Like, while you could play certain songs and you can pick the same licks out of a lot of them, or blues riffs or whatever, they do sound completely different, even though he's playing basically some of the same runs. So, yeah, he ended up, I think, taking... And like Stevie Ray Vaughan's another great example of that, you know, taking the Albert King thing and the Jimi Hendrix thing and coming out with something that was, I don't want to say unique, but it was, you know, it was his version of all of that stuff. It wasn't Albert King. If you hear Albert King and Stevie Ray, they do sound pretty different to each other, even though Stevie's playing a lot of the Albert King style. It just, you can never replicate that to the exact. So gear is not definitely not going to help in that.
Right. Well, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, like, if you had two twins that played the guitar, you know, would they sound the same or similar? And then if you separated them at birth and they learned how to play and then you got them together, would they sound the same? You know, this is how you got to do the test.
Yeah, that's right.
Because there's so much to how you're fretting, how you're bending and how you're picking and where you're picking and your timing. And there's just so much to it. Even like when I'm trying to play along with a song and I know I've got the timing right.
Yeah.
It still doesn't quite sound right. You know what I mean? And it's just like, how in the hell is that person doing that? How are they able? And it has something to do with how long they're holding that note and releasing it.
Yeah. And, it's a finesse thing as well as it would be just their own touch. You know, they're not thinking about
absolutely.
It's just, they're doing it that way that works for them. So yeah, I think, you know, for years I looked to, like, Knopfler is one of my big influences as well. I really love what he does. And, you know, some of his stuff is, like, totally still out of my range of ability. But some of it I've managed to kind of get the feel for. But even, you know, 15 years later, I still can't just master that finesse / touch on a couple of his really well-known songs. And it's just, you know, it's just the way that it is. I think people have got to...
I think that some of the greatest guitar players are the ones that, you know, were self-taught. They didn't know what they were doing, and they didn't know that they were breaking the rules. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Knopfler... He had a very similar story to a lot of people that became great guitarists. Didn't have a lot of money, got a cheap guitar, you know, just kept practicing, doing things, trying to figure out how to do this. And then the next thing you know, people are like, how in the hell do you do that? Right. And he's like, well, isn't this what everybody does? You know, Jerry Reed is another person.
He's fantastic.
And there's not many people at all that can do what Jerry Reed did. You know, Eddie Van Halen.
And sing another. Like that as well at the same time.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a song Chet Atkins there's a few of them with Jerry Reed and Chet Atkins on YouTube where Jerry's singing and playing the most complicated stuff. Like, and he makes it look so easy. I love that guy's voice. And he's in, I've forgotten the movie. What's it called?
Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah.
He, Jerry Reed, his stuff was so complex as he got older, he forgot how to play his own stuff.
Yeah.
And he would have to sit there and try to figure it out. And he'd be like, well, how in the hell do you do that, son? You know, he'd be sitting there trying to figure it out and couldn't do it. But it seems like a lot of the greatest guitarists really they don't know what they're doing. And that's what makes them great, because it's everybody else is there trying to follow this pattern. And you can tell, like, I mean, it's like, this is going to piss some people off. Steve Vai has fantastic talent. He's got fantastic skill, but he, to me at least, he's too, I call it MIDI. Like, he's too robotic. Like it, there's something about it where I just don't, it's too accurate. Like, there's just something about it. I just can't get into it. It seems to me like there's too many rules and he follows them and he tries to master every little thing. And that comes out in his playing and it sounds great. And then you compare him to somebody like Joe Satriani, who's more about the feel of it. And he's accurate as hell too, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't feel like he has to be too flashy to get this to get the message across, and it's all about feeling and interaction, you know.
Yeah, I think feelings are probably the biggest part, whether or not you're coming from a technical or fast chops background, or you're coming from a simple, you know, blues background. I think the feel will always end up sounding better to most people who kind of listen to it like that. I mean, look at B.B. King, 5 licks, done. You know, and they feel good, they sound good. There's a whole lot of great players out there that, you know, some of my favorite players, and I you know, it's the guitar player from White Zombie back in the old days, you know, like that guy was a monster guitar player. And I don't know how, if he was technical or not, but what he did felt great for that style of music. Like he just seemed to pick the best runs, the best notes, and the, you know, put it all together. Mm-hmm. And it had a lot of feel. And yeah, there's a lot of that. That's the way I like to listen to things too. If things are too clinical or too, they just lack that. They just lack that sort of what's the word? Just that feel or the you know the deep.
It should grab you. I was talking to a guitarist, a friend of mine in Florida, a guy named Rob Sinclair, and you know, we were talking about Steve Vai because he's a guy we both pick on. Right. And I say that people like Steve Vai, well, Steve Vai has what I call riff Tourette's, right? Where he'll sit there, he'll be playing, you've got the groove, you're getting into it. Then all of a sudden he goes off and he does something and it doesn't really fit with what he just did. And then he comes back again.
Yeah.
And it's just like Tourette's. And it's just like, like you had me. Well, it's the Frank Zappa. I think he spent too much time with Frank Zappa. You know, but he, and like I said, you know, I think that he's a fantastic player and stuff. I just can't get into his playing. You know, Paul Gilbert, you know, he does something a little similar, but his is easier to like grasp. You know, even though he's going all over the place and playing like a monster, it's easier to get the feel of the music, I think.
Yeah, cool. So I guess our YouTube channels are fairly comparable in terms of subscribers. I think you might be a little bit ahead of mine, but, you know, it's around roughly the same size over, you know, the course of the last couple of years. You know, I've had the odd occasion where I've been trolled on YouTube for whatever reason. People don't like the way that my hair's receding, or they don't like, you know, my playing, which I don't really care because everyone likes different things. But your channel has been inundated. I don't know if that's the right word, but I've seen lots of problems with people in the community that surrounds your channel. And I'm assuming this all started with the Tonewood debate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the Tonewood debate. And, you know, like I was going to mention earlier, that if I could go back in the past and change the way that I did some of my like in response to videos, I would have.
Yeah.
But at the same time, because of the way I did those videos, I was gaining subscribers. Mm-hmm. The Tonewood thing pisses people off, but people also get pissed off that I'm not politically correct and I speak my mind, and it's just the way that you see me on the videos and the way that you see me here is exactly how I am in real life.
Yeah.
Right. Every other word is fuck and whatnot. Every other word is.
Yeah.
And that, you know, right now I'm doing my best not to do that because I know this, it's your channel, you know.
That's all right. Let it out, mate.
But the thing is I don't pull any punches and I don't like putting up with any shit. And, you know, some people would ask a question and I didn't like the tone of it. And I would basically tell them to go pound sand or something. And then I have an enemy now.
Yeah.
The Tonewood thing did start bringing a lot of trolls. And even if I were to do it, even if I were to have done some of those response videos, that were to some of the first naysayers, or I shouldn't say naysayers. I should say like the first people that were like attacking me for my position. Even if I were to be like Mother Teresa, you know, showing them why they were wrong, I still would get the same amount of hate. Yeah. And I'm controversial. And because of that, I'm bringing a lot of people to come in and attack me. And I get trolls every single day.
Yeah,
I can't tell you a day that I haven't got one. I mean, and then there's sometimes it's really strange over holiday periods. Yeah. I get more. More during the holidays.
And people might have more free time maybe at the end of the year or something like that. I'm not too sure.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think that they're pissed off. They have to eat some turkey or something for Thanksgiving, and they're going to take it out on me. But, yeah, they'll show up. And generally, I would say 99% of the time, these trolls, you just ban them. Don't even respond. You just ban them, hide their comments. That's it. And they'll go away. But there's some people that usually you said something they didn't like, you know, or they think you're part of the Illuminati, because there's crazy motherfuckers on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
That they're going to see your video and they're going to swear that you're a lizard person and your eyes are changing and shit.
And yeah, I think we've all spent way too much time on the weird side of YouTube, whether we admit it or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's nut jobs out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is they have these personal vendettas against you. And then so what they'll do is they'll create a bunch of troll accounts. And then they'll start posting videos up about you. And then they start making stuff up. And, you know, there's recently, over the past maybe I'd say 6 months, there was this I've had a few troll accounts that have been really coming down on me. And, you know, doing a bunch of slander and libel and stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
And going beyond just trolling, like they'll go to like Adult Friend Finder and make bogus accounts under my name.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And Craigslist and all this other stuff. And it's just because they didn't like what I said in a YouTube video. And,
I wonder what's wrong with these people in real life. Like, you know, that's taking things way too, it's just way too far. Like, if I don't like something that someone says on a video, I either don't comment on it and I just leave. I've never sat there and just abused someone in text form or whatever, unless they've absolutely grilled me for something, then I'll hand it back and ban them. But yeah, that's taken things to a whole level. It's insane. I don't understand that at all.
Well, yeah, I was about to say that's the reason why you do it the way that you do it is because you're sane. you know, I mean, and like for a perfect example of how some of this started was I ended up it all started because of the stupid Tonewood debate.
Yeah.
You know, there was some people that were on the side of Tonewood and they were saying I'm a liar and I'm a hypocrite and all this other stuff. And, you know, they're doing this and they're making videos about me. And the first guy that we started having this online battle was me and this guy named Warlock Wyatt. Mm-hmm. And we were going back and forth. And, it, you know, it was annoying and sometimes it was fun. And I think that he would probably say the same thing. But what was happening is it was creating division among the people in the guitar community, and they had to pick a side almost.
Yeah, okay.
And so it was an army of trolls over here and an army of trolls over here. And we were both getting just bombarded. And, you know, people started doxing each other and they started, you know, making impersonation accounts of people's relatives. And it started getting really, really out of hand. And so.
Sorry, man. That is so bad. Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. I can't believe that.
Oh, yeah. It got really, really bad. And then, you know, there was death threats and everything. Because I've had death threats over Tonewood, by the way. I've had people threaten to kill me because of my position on Tonewood. Right. Yeah. I've had this one guy who threatened to stab me in the throat, right? Because of Tonewood.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so bad. What? Seriously, these guys got, like, mental issues, man.
Yeah. They do.
And you know what surprises me as well? I was talking about this on the last podcast that I did. People aren't even, I don't know, you're a smart guy, you know your stuff, you know your craft. There's always someone that knows more about anything than what I would or what you would or what everyone else would. Mm-hmm. And you're one of those guys, you've dealt with this for a while. Why are people so close-minded when it comes to, like, receiving new information that might actually be a benefit to them? That's what I don't understand.
I think that if you could answer that question, you would be able to invoke world peace.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's because it's not just about tone, wood, and guitar stuff. It's about religion. It's about why, you know, why is it, you know, you just can't change your mind about that. Why? It doesn't matter how. Like, perfect example. I just recently did two videos about the flat earth because I
was
had
about
some
to
flat
ask
earthers.
You about that. Yeah. Welcome to a whole new range of trolls, man.
Retards. Yeah. I was doing a Google Hangout and we were doing a drinking game in it. And I thought it would be fun to interact with the subscribers and everything, you know, and a lot of them are my friends. I consider my subscribers my friends.
Yes.
And, you know, they're there and we're playing. And all of a sudden this guy comes in and starts talking about the earth being flat and how we're a bunch of sheep and we're stupid. And, you know, we're slaves to the government and the Illuminati and the lizard people. And, yeah. And I'm just like, oh, my God. Well, he pissed everybody off. And I knew that there was a Flat Earth Society, but I didn't realize how much it had been. This movement has been growing.
Yeah, it's huge. It's funny because I look at all kinds of videos on YouTube. Oh, sorry to cut you off there. And nearly every other day now in my recommended videos, something like that comes up. I'm like, are you serious? Not another one. But yeah, I've watched the videos on what they think is on the thought behind their movement. Put that in quotations, but yeah, it's crazy stuff, man. It is crazy stuff, and that doesn't look like it's going away either.
No, the flat Earth movement you should not confuse with the bowel movement. I mean, they're pretty much one of the same thing. Shit, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And but I felt compelled to do two videos to disprove this moron that was in there, and you know, it's just. I didn't even get into the physics of anything. I just sat there and these are all things that you can observe yourself. Like you do not have to trust NASA. You don't have to trust your government. You can go out and observe these things. And I even went out to the ocean because there's a part out where I live really close to the ocean and there's an area where I can see for miles and miles and miles across the horizon. And I leveled that camera and I panned it perfectly flat, and then I came back and I put a red line on the video, and you can see the curve of the earth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everybody claims he can't, but anybody that has been to the ocean that is at a vantage point that's higher than sea level being here,
yeah,
right, you can see it.
Yeah,
it's slight, but you can see it, and they deny that. You know, it doesn't matter what evidence you give them, they're in complete denial. So you have to ask yourself, this goes back to your question, you know, how do you change their mind? How do you change a Muslim's mind that their faith is wrong? How do you change a Christian's mind that their faith is wrong? How do you change the Buddhists? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why it's so hard for people to change.
And I also think it's a level of significance, too. Like, is, you know... What's the right way to put this? Guitars are guitars, you know. They're not saving the saving the world. They're not, you know. They're not curing cancer or anything like that. They're guitars. So, what's the big deal if it's not legit? It's not going to change your love for playing guitar. It's not going to change the musicality you can get from them or anything like that. It's just you're stating an objective opinion / fact backed up by tests and evidence that you've done. People should be at least open to that. Not steamrolling you with abuse. I just don't understand that. Like,
in all fairness, in some of my videos, I can be pretty abusive. Like to the people that challenge me, to the people that challenge me, I'm pretty abusive. I mean, in all fairness, but it's just, you know, like I said, how I am in my videos. That's how I am in real life, and I'm unfiltered. And it's just you're getting all of me, you're getting the emotion, you know.
Yeah.
But talking about the guitar thing, you know, like in the I can only equate it to a movie because I'm not old enough to actually go back to verify if any of this stuff was true. But you know, you see an old cowboy movie or something, and somebody has their favorite horse, and they're very close to their horse, and their favorite saddle, their favorite shirt, their favorite six guns. You know, all this other stuff, and it's a part of them. And it's like, if something happens to that saddle or my boots or whatever, and I think a guitar should be just like that. And it doesn't matter if it's old and beat up. It doesn't matter if it's a certain brand. You should have an emotional connection to your instrument because, it's like a ventriloquist doll. You're making it talk, right? You're speaking through it. And that's why I ended up selling all of my guitars and I ended up building my Biocaster. And people, they look at it and they're like, oh my God, that's ugly. But you know something? That's me. Like, I mean, everything about it, you know, using firewood for the body. And it was beetles. There was beetles in it. And I had to get the beetles out and everything because they were eating the mesquite.
I think I saw you putting a video together. You put a video together as you were building that. Is that correct? You went out and maybe...
Part of it. Yeah, part of it. Where I went out to this place where they have nothing but huge piles of mesquite that they throw in the smoker for these restaurants.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to buy some of the mesquite. And they looked at me like I was crazy. And they said, whatever. And so I think I spent like $15 or something on the wood.
Yeah.
And I was just picking up different pieces, brought it back, and I milled it. And I took a compressor with some air, blew all the beetles and the larvae out. And, you know, ended up making my body, and I love the body on it. It's heavy as hell.
Yeah.
And then every, you know, even the fretboard was a damaged fretboard that when I was milling it, it got one of the blades, the blade on the bandsaw came loose, screwed it up. I said, that's my fretboard.
Cool.
The neck on it was not a piece that I was going to give to a customer. I'm like, that's my fretboard. Even my pickups that are in it were seconds because I'm like, I can't give this to a customer. And so I'm like, that's my pickup.
Yeah.
And everything about it is imperfect. And to me, that makes it perfect.
Yeah, I'll have to put a picture of that up over this part of the podcast on YouTube too. If you've got a photo, I'll definitely chuck it up on screen so people can see it at the same time.
Yeah, I haven't taken any photos of it yet. But the one thing that at least everybody sees and they go, that's so cool, is my fretboard on it.
Yeah.
Because of all the porn stars that are the fret markers.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. And they're just like, they're like, how did you do that? And I'm like, that's ancient Chinese secret. I can't tell you.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, that's where the secret to the tone comes from, man, right there. That's what you can tell them.
Yeah, that's why it sounds the way that it does, you know. But, yeah, I just, you know, I have an emotional connection to this. And I started putting parts of my past on there.
Yep.
Heads from old action figures for the knobs, you know, scratch and sniff stickers and stickers, bubblegum stickers from when you were a kid.
Yeah.
You know, all that because it's a time machine. It's a part of you. And then to me, it's like, that's the greatest guitar. And most people would look at that and they say, you couldn't even sell that at a garage sale. Right. And to me, it's like, that's priceless. I would never sell that.
Yeah. Well, awesome.
You know, and then I think that's the way everybody's guitar should be. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think you should have Eddie Van Halen's replica, right? That's Eddie Van Halen's guitar. That's not yours. I think it should be like that. Or like a perfect example for the life of me. Come on, Willie. Remember. Brian May.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, think about the sentimental value of that guitar him and his dad built. Out of parts around the house, out of old mantel pieces for fireplaces, out of blockboard, sewing machine parts. I mean,
Yeah. Well, that's it. He'll never get rid of that. And it's funny you mention that kind of thing too, because I've been lucky enough to go to the US a number of times, and one of the times I was over there, I picked up this beautiful 52 reissue Telecaster that I put a lot of work into. I played the frets out in a couple of years, like those vintage frets just wore out. And I remember posting a video on, you know, the upgrade, putting 6105 stainless steel frets in there. I changed the pickups out, made it more like how I would like the guitar to play. And it's beautiful. It's a guitar that I'm never going to get rid of as long as I'm playing. And I remember people just saying, oh, yeah, if you don't like traditional single coils, you know, fuck you and all this kind of stuff. I was like, what? I'm like, have you even heard the Joe Barton pickups? They're fantastic. You're like, I love the sound of them. And it's not about what you like. It's about what I like. And they're like, and also just changing the frets to stainless steel was like sacrilegious. I'm like, dude, now this guitar is going to last me, you know, I'm not going to wear through these. As long as I'm playing, I doubt I'll wear through stainless steel frets. Excuse me. So... yeah, just even little modifications on a classic, you know, I remember I got pretty much flamed for doing those upgrades. I'm like, that's the only Telecaster I have, and it's the only one I need. It meets all my requirements. I love it. You know, there's only a couple of guitars that I have that mean what that one does to me, both musically and just, you know, it's great. Yeah, you're right. So there's definitely a connection to some of my instruments. Well, being on albums, that kind of stuff.
I have a friend that he had a couple of guitars. He had no idea what they were worth. Yeah. This was years ago. He got them from his grandfather that were out in a barn, and they were 1952 Telecasters. And they were just out in a barn.
Yeah, wow.
Right, two of them. And the cases were all falling apart and everything.
Yeah.
And somebody many years ago didn't like the color of it, so they took house paint and they painted the guitar with house paint. Okay. And I'm looking at this guitar and I'm like, besides some of the rust and some of the other things, some of the dryness of the wood that can actually be fixed, this is what's funny. He goes, how much do you think these things are worth? And I told him, I said, dude, you don't even realize you're on a gold mine right now, but don't worry about that. Ignore that. And he goes, well, do you think that we should restore it? And I told him, no. I said, leave it exactly the way that it is.
Yeah.
I said, this is, you know, that house paint in a way is like patina on an old pirate ship, you know, cannon or something.
Yeah.
It's the damage that it earned. And you want a relict instrument, you got one, fool, and it's real.
Yeah, absolutely. Geez, they'd be worth a fortune, the old tellies. I don't know what they go for now, but probably 90 grand, I guess. Maybe.
I think at the time when we were pricing them, we figured that a moderate estimate on what each one was worth was about 7,500.
Right? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a moderate one because of their condition and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, but okay.
Even then, it's just like, dude, you're dealing with some like original shit here that it's been in a barn. Nobody even cared.
Yeah, it was
in this barn.
I've seen some old school tallies go for you know, I guess they're probably untouched, I should, you know, in terms of the way that they were sold, but they went upwards of a lot more money than that, I think. I've even seen them on some TV shows just go for, you know, crazy amounts of money. So yeah,
well, it's like cars. It's like old cars. Like if you can get a stock, you know, 1968 Camaro or something like that, that has low miles, it's millions, you know. But if you end up finding one that has a bunch of parts changed out and it's been painted and it's been in two accidents, you can still sell it for a lot, but it's not going to be like that pristine one.
Fair enough. Cool.
You know, and guitars are like that, which is really interesting. That a lot of the guitars, like, because if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I'm 36.
Okay, I'm 43.
Yeah.
And when I was growing up, every year for Christmas, we'd get a Christmas catalog, right? And you could see all the toys that the department store sold. And there would always be a couple of guitars there. And the guitars were always these cheap electric guitars, but I mean, by today's standards. We could never afford them, you know, but I just remember looking at those and $99 or something like that, $89, and hunks of shit. Nobody wanted them in the 80s. Nobody wanted them in the 90s. Silver tones and things like that. And nowadays there's collectors and they're spending a lot of money on these old guitars that are hunks of junk.
Yeah, wow.
And it's just amazing. So it kind of makes you want to go out and get that first act guitar for $70 and just hold on to it for 50 years. And it's going to be worth a fortune.
Yeah, you know? That's it. Yeah.
That's your retirement right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's interesting. I wouldn't have picked those kind of guitars being a collector's item all these years later. So,
Well, nobody, you know, that's the thing. You never know what is going to become really expensive and popular and a collector's item. I mean, when I was a kid, when it came to toys, you know, I was collecting Star Wars stuff and I had tons of it and it got stolen. But if I had all of it, I'd be sitting easily on a couple $100,000 of stuff.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, but there's people that were buying Cabbage Patch dolls and everybody was collecting these those things are worthless now, you know, but they thought it was going to go up in value. Didn't go. I mean, baseball cards, it's like the same thing. How do you know which one's going to go up in value, which one's not?
Yeah. I think when I was 6 or 7, I was collecting wrestling figurines, you know, like the Hulk Hogan.
The LBJs. Yeah. The LBJ ones.
Yeah. I think they're probably worth a fair bit more now than, you know, what they were back in the old days. I must have had the pretty much all of them back when I was a kid. So King Kong, Bundy, and all the funny, all the old school guys grew out of yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that because I'm looking over here because I had a bunch of my baseball cards and stuff and wrestling cards down there. And I have the original, what do they call that? Venue, like, what do they call that thing? When they give it to you, like when you go to a play or you go to a show and it's like a booklet that has everything.
I know what you mean. I can't remember, I know what you're talking about, though. Yeah.
I have the original WrestleMania and the WrestleMania 2. And they're like magazines. And then you got those when you went to go see them. And I have those over here. And I'm just like, oh, my God, where are those? But I can't see them right now. But, yeah, I was a wrestling fan. I think most guys growing up around our age were wrestling fans.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah. It's definitely popular. That and the old G.I. Joes. That was more of a mid-80s thing, I think. They were always popular with my sort of age group as well.
Well, the original G.I. Joe was a 60-70 thing because that was in the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip, and they were dolls that were like 12 inches and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then they kind of died out, and probably because of the Vietnam War, who knows. And then you started having Bionic Man, and you had some of the tall Star Wars and stuff and Big Jim. And then in the 80s, you started having the small G.I. Joes.
Yeah, they're the ones Yeah,
and then those guys were kind of like, you know, if you didn't have the proper bad guy for your Star Wars guy, you know, you could take a G.I. Joe and bring him on over. He-Man was too big, so fuck him.
yeah. So what's next for your channel? You've obviously treaded new ground doing the Flat Earth responses there. So you got any other interesting things planned in the short term?
Whatever comes out, comes out. Yep. You know, it's like whatever I'm in the mood to talk about is what's going to end up coming out. And, you know, I want to do some more videos to help people out on doing setups. And because there's so many people out there that have good guitars, they're poorly set up and they think they have a shitty guitar.
Yeah.
And then, so they think they have to go out and buy a Paul Reed Smith, they have to buy a Gibson, or they have to buy you know, you can get a cheap, you know, $80 Strat from a pawn shop that is like a Squire. Mm-hmm. Do a really good setup on it, maybe change out a pickup or two, and you can have a fantastic instrument.
But
people just don't know how to do it. And so I want to do more videos like that as soon as I can start getting the time. Right now, I'm trying to get about 23 guitars done by the end of this year.
Wow.
It's not going to happen. I might be able to get 10 done before the end of December, but the other ones are just going to have to wait for the month after that. It is what it is. You know, I mean, because I was getting about 3, maybe 4 orders a month. Mm-hmm. And that was about what was going on for the year before. And out of nowhere, I just started getting all of these orders. And, you know, one day I'd wake up, there's 5 orders. And I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, I'm like, well, I can fit that in. I can still get to you. And I tell the people, I'll have it done for you a month and a half.
Yep.
And then the next day there's like 12 orders, right? And I'll be like, oh shit, okay. And how am I going to do this? And it just came. It had this huge. It was just like this huge thing, and I've been trying to catch up ever since. You know, and I mean, I like the work, but good Lord, I mean, it's like.
I think it's a trust thing too. People know who they're dealing with. You know, they see you on YouTube. They feel like they know you. I mean, I've been guilty of watching you drive around talking about stuff as you go through Vegas. Is it Vegas you live in, Las Vegas?
No, I live in San Diego.
Oh, San Diego. California. Sorry, I always get that confused. Yes, yeah. You did say that before. San Diego. Yeah. So,
well, I was about to say, when I'm driving, around, do you see a bunch of whores? Because if you do, that's probably Vegas.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm always trying to come up with new content and whatnot because how should I put this? The subscribers are not there for me. Like, I'm there for the subscribers, you know, and anytime that I do a video and I've helped somebody and somebody says, man, thank you so much. You've helped me, you know, and I've had this problem for years and I watched your video and now it's taken care of. I'm just like, it was worth the video. It was worth the time doing it. And, you know, anytime that you can teach somebody something, that's really, you know, I always say, you know, information not shared is information wasted.
Yeah.
And it's all about educating people and trying to, you know, and I'm not always right. it's rare I'm wrong. Right? But
you thought you were wrong. No, what is it? You thought you were wrong once, but you were incorrect. Yeah, you're mistaken.
But I'm not always right, but I'm willing to teach people what I know.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I had recently done is a lot of people have been asking me, how do you build a neck? How do you do this? How do you do that? And I said, God, everybody wants me to teach them how to build a guitar. So I started a guitar building course.
Yeah, beautiful.
Right. So it's like, because I've had people say, I want to be an apprentice, like luthier. How do I do it? And can I come work for you? And right now I'm in Florida. Right now I'm in New York. And it's like, don't come out here to be an apprentice luthier. It's like, you're not going to make any money. You'll be homeless. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So what I did is I came up with this guitar building course that I ended up putting on my website.
Yeah, tell people how to get that and links and so forth. Yeah,
just go to GelvinGuitars.com. It's G-E-L-V-I-N guitars.com. Go to the products page. Right now, actually, for Christmas, I have everything like reduced really cheap. So all 7 videos that I currently have, I have it for $99.
Yeah, awesome.
And they're usually $30 per lesson. Mm-hmm. But it goes over like designing your guitar, making templates, how to make necks, how to do fretwork, how to do electronics, how to build bodies, how to paint the thing. It goes over everything. So by the time that you're done watching these, there's absolutely no reason at all that you cannot build any guitar that you want and understand why the guitar works the way that it works.
Yeah, yeah, right? Awesome. Oh, that sounds great. Cool.
That was a shameless plug.
No, it's good. I wanted to. I'll put links up over the video for people watching on YouTube as well, so they can find that easier. And great.
And then the custom guitars. Don't think that just like what you see is the only thing that you can get. If you have an idea or you have a certain like fantasy guitar or something, send me a thing. Tell me what you're interested in. I can give you a price because I can build literally anything.
Yeah, beautiful. So, cool. Oh, awesome stuff. What's the biggest challenge you've had in terms of building a guitar at the moment? Or are they all unique?
Actually, this is what's funny. I'm pretty good at building and painting almost anything.
Yeah.
But when you have somebody ask you to do something that's random, how do you do it without it looking forced random? And like, for instance, I'm building a Flying V right now, and I'm in the process of finishing up all of the final paint of it.
Yeah.
But he wants to have blood splatters all over it. And so I'm thinking, how do I make it look like it's not done intentionally?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I've actually been thinking what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a chicken or something that's dead, dip it in the paint, and slaughter it near the guitar and whatever, but I mean, so it looks real. That's exactly, and I've been thinking, how do you do that? How do you fake randomness?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I guess that's the same with the relicking thing too. They, certain relic jobs look fantastic and others just look like someone's taken
the shit out of it.
So there's a fine line between, keeping it legit and going too far one way or the other, I guess.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Yeah.
How do you fake random? How do you fake random?
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing. I mean, there's been some things in the past where somebody's asked me to do something and I'm like, how in the hell am I know I can do it. It's like, how in the hell am I going to do this? And a lot of times it's when somebody's asking you almost to defy the laws of physics, they'll sit there and they'll say, I want a scale length of this and I want to have this gauge wire, but I want to have the action like, and you're like, it defies the laws of physics. It's not going to happen. I can't do it. Hmm. And then there's other times people will say, well, I want to have all of this stuff in my guitar. And you're like, there's no room. Like you can't have all the stuff you're asking for on this. There's no room. And all of a sudden it clicks and you're like, it can be done. And actually I do like that stuff because it kind of makes me think, and every time that you overcome a challenge like that, it makes you that much better.
Yeah. It's always stuff you've got in your bag for a bag of tricks for next time as well. So it's all a good learning experience. That's great. Thanks so much for your time. I absolutely appreciate you.
Oh yeah, no problem.
Making time for the Skype chat. And if you're listening on YouTube, you can also download the full podcast at guitarpedaldemos.com, or it'll also be available on iTunes and any of the Android devices coming up. Well, probably as you're listening to this, more than likely. If you want to find out more about Will's guitars, you can go to galvanguitars.com. And just what's the direct link to your Will's Easy Guitar YouTube channel? Is it just Will's Easy Guitar after YouTube?
Well, yeah, and there's one note that I want to make about that, if I might,
yeah.
And that is Will's Easy Guitar is not the Galvan Guitars YouTube channel. It's my private channel,
yep,
that is not directly related to the company. And there's a lot of people that get confused with that, and so they say, the way that you're doing your channel, it's horrible for your company. And it's like, well, first of all, this isn't my company's channel. This is my personal channel, and I just sometimes talk about my company.
Fair enough.
Will's Easy Guitar, easy to find. Just look up Tonewood, you'll find me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'll find me.
Cool. Oh, thanks again. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, no problem, Shane. Cool. Thanks for having me, man.
No worries.